Welcome back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. We have Acid 9 Toys on, and let me tell you, it is absurd to me that his follower count is low because his work is insane. His wife is a sculptor. They've nailed articulation. They've nailed all of the process. What are we doing here? This week, go take a listen and follow them and get them the eyes they deserve. If you want to jump on more Toys on Tap, you can follow us on all socials at Toys on Tap. If you want to jump on and support us in a free way, you can like, rate, review, subscribe wherever you get podcasts. And if you want to jump on even more, you can jump on the Patreon, patreon.com/ToysOnTap. For just $3 a month, you get nitty gritty, extra content, extra episodes, all the good stuff. Now let's jump back into this week's episode of Toys on Tap. What's up, man? I'm pumped that you're on. I'm pumped. I'm holding Skullmaster right now. Yeah, man. Is this an original sculpt? I mean, we're going to get into it.
You bet. Yeah. Basically, everything we've done so far, even the stuff that is of other people's stuff, is all original sculpts. Like, we did a Phantom Starkiller and some Knights of the Slays from Toy Pizza. Mm-hmm. And but we re-sculpt everything and do it.
Heck yeah. Dude, yeah. I can't wait to talk about all this. I'm pumped because this is a great figure. Like, the articulation on it is unreal and how tight it is and how clean.
That's the thing that I've just started getting into, is trying to figure out how to do the molding and figure out how tight this articulation is. Because, like, when you 3D sculpt stuff, print it, and then coat it, trying to take into account the thickness of that coating. Mm-hmm. You know, like, on some of the stuff like this one, like, the joints are really tight.
Yeah.
You know, after the mold process, so you gotta tweak that out a little bit, and trying to figure it out. I've been having a hard time with trying to get the silicone to not inhibit once I'm doing from a 3D print. Mm-hmm. That seems to be my biggest challenge right now, is that silicone doesn't like 3D printed stuff. So
that doesn't surprise me. Silicone sometimes is a fickle beast. But I'm pumped that you're on. Before we're going to dive into all this stuff, because I, especially now that I have some in my hand, tell us who you are, what you do, introduce yourself.
Under the title Acid 9 Toys, because it's an asinine idea to try to make toys. that's basically what it is. Terrible at naming stuff, always have been. When I first got into this was a long time ago. I was doing miniatures, like, for wargaming, tabletop miniature stuff. We were doing under the title Quest Miniatures, and I was our first kick at the can of that. We were doing He-Man inspired, you know, 1-inch tall. Mm-hmm. Metal die cast miniatures is what we were doing.
Made out of, like, pewter?
Yeah, made out of pewter. Yeah. That's centrifugally cast in pewter.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big Warhammer hobby game guy. That's was my background when I got into this. And then I wanted to get more into it. I wanted to be part of it. I wanted to see if I could make a go of it. And we landed on that. And that's how it all started. We actually went to PowerCon in 2017 was our first big thing. We drove down from Canada all the way to California for that.
That's crazy.
That a wild weekend. And got to see all the other guys doing custom stuff, doing bootleg stuff, doing vintage stuff. Mm-hmm. Picked up my first Glios figure.
Heck yeah.
Down there. And I was looking at that, and that's when I started researching what Glios was. I found Toy Pizza and all the other guys that do that stuff, and they're making toys and they're making their own custom toys. So, like, and then when COVID happened, the shipping in Canada slowed to a grind and was hard to. So we quit doing the miniature thing and kind of evolved into trying to make toys work.
Heck yeah. It's crazy. The play on words with asinine and acid nine is a really good play on words.
Well, anybody trying to do it, they know what I'm talking about, because
yeah,
it's a lot.
It is a lot. I haven't made anything since probably like August. I kind of stepped away from the maker side of things, and it is like, that was always a lot doing that and the podcast. And now I'm doing like working with some factories to try to get things produced. And I'm finding out that's just as much.
Every aspect of this is always something extra.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you could follow the steps of Craftman. Every episode, you just learn every episode. Everything's a new thing. Everything's a new challenge. Everything is different.
Yeah.
Set a problem, a learning curve, everything.
It's so crazy. But I'm pumped that you're on. It's crazy that you start with miniatures, and I want to get to that, because to start with miniatures, I mean, that means paint skills and like molding skills have got to be so tight because they're so tiny. But walk me back. Take me back to toys when you were a kid. Tell me about that kind of stuff. What kind of toys you have?
Toys when I was a kid, 80s, 90s kid. So like the toys I had, I mean, of course the big primer had lots of Lego, but I always had the cartoons I watched. I was watching He-Man, watching Thundercats, watching Transformers. So always a little bit of all of those things, you know. I never got like a full collection of anything. Mm-hmm. I always had like a couple key things, like, you know, I had probably 4 Ninja Turtles, you know, but not all. Like Michelangelo is my favorite, so I had 2 Michelangelos, and I had a couple of the bad guys, and then I'd have Rhino and a couple Thundercats, and I had a couple He-Man, a couple Transformers here and there, and, you know, Toxie from Toxic Crusaders. That was one of my favorites too. Madballs, just, you know, not, I wasn't like a collector, just, you know, I jump back and forth from all the different stuff, but I like, my biggest fall is I like everything. You can talk me into anything, any genre, any idea, from horror to, if you talk to me enough about it, I'm on board.
Yeah. I feel that at a very real level, though, like I never had a completed set, because it's always just like whatever toys were at hand, you just played with those.
Mm-hmm.
And you set them up and they all fought and they all lived in the world together and did whatever. Even I think the closest I got, do you remember Power Rangers had those really bulky body ones where the head would flip?
Yeah, the head flip. Yeah.
Looking back, I don't like that toy. But I think I had all of them.
Yeah. Remind me of the first Silverhawks.
Yeah.
Because they did that same thing, but I think the Silverhawks looked better.
Yeah, the body was just
a little bit better.
Yeah, I think that I wish toy companies, like looking back, would know that if you had to widen the body to make something cool happen, maybe it wasn't that cool.
Or widen it proportionally.
Yeah, yeah, like, that is crazy.
A deformed figure.
Yeah. Growing up, I mean, did you have like, because you had all these different toys, was there something that was like, you got this toy and it was your absolute favorite?
I was actually thinking about it, and it wasn't that long ago I started looking it up. It was Visionaries.
I've never even heard of Visionaries.
So Visionaries, they were articulated like G.I. Joes,
mm-hmm.
but they were a little bit bigger and they had a hologram.
Okay.
On their chest, and then they had a little pole arm with a hologram and a helmet that would go on, kind of like masks, like a rubbery helmet that would go on. Visionaries, Knights of Light or whatever. That was it's an obscure toy line too.
Yeah.
Awesome. I really, that Leoric, that main blue guy, mm-hmm. was probably my go-to.
Did it have a show or anything that kind of went with it?
Yeah, they had a 1.5 season animated, you know, like the whole American Jap anime style stuff.
Yeah.
It was a small toy line. Like, I think there was only like 8 characters, two or three small vehicles and two big vehicles. It didn't last very long.
Yeah, that sounds kind of like the Sectars almost. Like it, right, yeah. They produce and then it's gone.
Same thing. Sectars had that thing that they're trying to break the market with this big, crazy toy. Yeah. It was too big for, you know, compared to everything else.
And yeah.
Like the hand puppet stuff was really neat. They had Sectars are cool for sure.
Yeah, that is crazy. And then, I mean, you because you're in Canada, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I always have to ask because the international artists, I mean, the U.S., we had so many crazy cartoons and toys and stuff. Tell me, did you have anything that we don't have here? Did you have anything that was like, this is obscure and I loved it?
I mean, I'm sure there's probably a couple Canadian releases that,
yeah,
you know, probably they mostly just like color differences and things like that.
Ah, not, bummer.
Nothing specifically like that's a Canadian made toy,
yeah,
that was a, you know, cartoon release style.
Yeah.
Anything was like, I remember I had a Stuffy from the Raccoons cartoon. That was a Canadian cartoon.
Yeah, I've never even heard of that.
And so it was a CBC, so Canadian produced children's cartoon called The Raccoons. And they were the raccoons that lived in a tree and ran a newspaper. And then there was like a pink anteater bad guy, kind of like Mr. Burns, that was, yeah, like trying to industrialize the forest or whatever. And they were trying to stop and protest him or whatever. It was a very Canadian thing to.
Sounds like propaganda for kids. Holy jeez.
Totally. Totally.
It was. They're just trying to make it so we don't move into Canada and industrialize everything. I'm always pumped. There's a lot of Canadian artists that I absolutely love and have had them on the podcast. So I'm always here for the Canadian brothers. But as you grow up a little bit, did we go one of two routes where you got to keep all your toys or that your parents one day were just like, we're getting rid of everything?
No, I mostly kept all the stuff that I had. It was... Okay. My mom thought that stuff was important. So it was, you know, I mean, things come and go, of course, you know, things get lost in translation, like moving and stuff like that. But most of the core stuff, like I got literally a Ziploc baggie my mom just gave me a couple months ago that had like some G.I. Joes, California Raisins, a whole bunch of,
oh yeah,
you know, like the loose ends and bits or whatever that she's found in her stuff as she's moved through the years and that. So,
yeah. Yeah, California Raisins, I had so many of, and as a kid, I didn't know what they were because it was like a little bit before me.
I remember what they were. It was like the big, it was the Christmas special. There was this clay animation Christmas special with dinosaurs, the California Raisins, that I remember when I was a kid. So that's what I know that was from.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like in Canada, the biggest difference I find when I talk to people from America is that we got everything released after.
Oh, it was like we'd already had it and then we're like, okay, here you go.
Exactly, right? Like, so like I was on second run He-Man when everybody else in America had already seen it.
Okay.
You know, so like because like I remember when we got cable. I remember we got cable because we had to get a VCR to have cable where we were.
Oh.
Cause you needed the VCR for the channel changing because we had like the clicker.
Yeah.
The knob TV, and to go enough channels, you needed a VCR to up the channels.
Oh my gosh.
And that was a big deal. Like I remember, because then when I figured out you could record one channel and watch the other channel.
Okay. So that's wild. That's wild. Yeah.
So I was up the first thing, and like, it was a national anthem. And like some Canadian like Goose Call cartoon, and then it was like Care Bears started off the roster, and then it just went. And so I'd be watching that, I'd be recording the YTV channel over here,
watching
this, and then I'd switch over and I'd put another tape in and be recording, watch this channel as the TV guy changes the times.
Man, you're like unlocking things in the back of my brain right now. I do have a question. You said the national anthem. Did it just like in the morning that went on?
It was fuzz in the morning, and then the national anthem would come on, and then it'd be like, so usually it was a Canadian heritage cartoon that started off,
uh-huh,
and then it would end up I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was Care Bears was the first one.
That is so patriotic of, I didn't know that, like, we, I mean, you hear about Americans and how they're like, we love America. And you're like, okay, chill out. Let's chill on that. But then I didn't know that. That's crazy. I didn't even know that that happened.
TV ended that way too. It was the last broadcast. It was the Canadian anthem, and then it went to the test screen, like the colored bars.
Oh yeah.
And then it hit fuzz around 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my gosh, that's unreal. there's a radio station actually that does that, and they're based in Mexico, and but they only play the U.S. like or songs in English. And the first thing they do at like 6 a.m. is like Mexican national anthem. And it's like wild. Like it's such a shock in the morning.
Back when TV used to end.
Yeah.
It's over for a little bit.
You're unlocking the like massive amounts of channels. I remember getting cable and they would send you the box and you would have like, you would just flick through, I don't know, however many channels. And as a kid, anything over 10, it was like, this is crazy. Like I have 30 channels. What am I going to watch? And I remember I went over to my dad's house and he had something like 400 channels. And I, looking back, I know that it was illegal cable. He stole it. But like, as I'm like, as a kid, I was like, man, he's paying thousands of dollars. No. It was straight up illegal cable.
Yeah, I know. Like, I don't think we had, like, I think it was like 138 channels, but it was like when the, because the way that cable came in, it came into the VCR.
Mm.
The VCR, so you could record on the VCR, and then whatever you put on the screen, just watching like the normal local channels, mm-hmm. wasn't being recorded. It was recording what channel was on the VCR.
That is so crazy.
So I could watch all the more, I could watch all the local stuff.
Yeah.
Or what was happening at that same time on the cable shows. And then when the local stuff ended, I went live to the cable shows to finish watching that. Mm-hmm. And then when cartoons were done, I could rewind the tape and catch what was happening on that channel. So I was watching cartoons all morning.
Yeah. God bless whoever figured that out
on Saturday.
Oh. Yeah. That's crazy too. So we get to a point where toys kind of probably peter off a little bit in your life, right? Like
yeah,
you
sure.
start to get old.
To high school.
Like, yeah.
You know, it just doesn't become as important. The people you're hanging out with aren't really following it and stuff. And it's, you know, it's sitting there. I mean, but at the same time, I'm still, every time I'm at Walmart, yeah. every time I'm at like a store and there's a toy aisle, I go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, check out, see what the new Lego is, what the new toys are. Even if I didn't pick anything up, just I'd always keep an eye on it,
mm-hmm.
interested in it. And then in high school, buddy introduced Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
Of course, right? So that was a big takeover. That was like the focus all through.
Yeah.
Late high school. And
I never got into Magic. Check this. I had a hyper religious mother who would not allow me to play Magic because of the name, which is wild, but would allow me to play Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh and Dragon Ball Z, all the other ones. But that's crazy. I don't ever remember getting into Magic even now. I think I've played Magic once or twice and, but that's okay. So you get into that. Does that mean toys, like, because you're still in some kind of like nerd culture though?
Yeah, I was always on the nerd culture side. So it was a little bit of video games, a little bit of Magic the Gathering. Mm-hmm. So my mind is always in there and I always liked that kind of stuff. I was always in that. And then like end of high school, I found out about at the Magic Gathering stores, of course, they also sold Warhammer stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I picked up, it was a little advertising foldy pamphlet for Warhammer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just in my bag and I got home and I was looking and I'm looking through this. And I'm like, the heck's this stuff? You know, and it was like pictures of painted miniatures.
Yeah.
You know, like there was so much detail and stuff. And my favorite, it was this picture of it was an orc and he had an axe over his head like this, like in a jumping position. And I was just like, That's the coolest thing I ever saw. That is odd. And they're made out of metal and then plastic bases, and they got grass on them and stuff. And then you go and you find deep down that rabbit hole for years, just learning how to paint, starting off with a handful of paints and just getting better and better and better, you know, all through high school and stuff. And never really playing the game. I probably collected and painted miniatures for 20 years and played 5 games. Like
the games look intense.
Too many rules, and change every 3 years. And because I like everything, I could never lock down on one army.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, that's cool. And that's cool. And I want to do that. And, you know, just a rotation of more and more and more. And because they're like, and then when you get into the plastics, they're like a model kit, and that plastic addiction is, if you talk to people who do Warhammer, it's a problem.
Yeah. there's a Warhammer store in San Diego that I'll get Citadel paint from because they have the biggest selection. And I'll walk in there and there's guys in there playing any number of war, and they have a whole tabletop with like, if I had to guess, it's about 1,000 pieces on the table.
Right.
And in my head, that's crazy.
There was one summer I decided I love miniatures. I was going to paint somebody's army for money.
Like, oh my gosh.
And I'm like, 150 blue space marines later, you're like, this is not a job. This is,
it's like, torture.
It's absolute torture. Yeah. And it's like, and you want to paint your stuff so bad, but you can't because you got to finish this project. And then you get that project done. And you're like, oh, great. I'm going to work on my stuff. And they're like, oh, I also have this.
Yeah.
And my friend has this. And everybody wants this. And you start painting for somebody and they want you to finish painting it. So it's the same as everybody, as the rest of their army.
Yeah.
And, like, you become like, you get locked in like a slave. And they're like, ah, no.
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 3.75 inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsors Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters.
It's crazy that like a whole army, if someone offered me thousands, I would still say no. That's crazy.
It's so intense. Like, and miniatures, like even not that good painted is hours.
Yeah.
Like you're like base coating and 3 colors and washing and then detailing, like hours per miniature every time.
Unreal. Unreal. Like you did that, and that, which is now cheap hobby as well. So you're like in that in high school. As you're painting that kind of stuff, are you also doing art stuff and art classes and that kind of stuff that's like fueling you?
No, it's the assembling and the customizing.
Okay.
Miniatures was my jam, and painting. It was the taking what it was supposed to look like and making it look different, making it my own, was the hobby. That was the art.
Mm-hmm. So no other art pops that, like, was in your life, really?
Not really, no.
Okay.
No, I'm, like, when I was a kid, I did some drawing stuff or whatever and doodles and stuff like that, but not, my art skill is, like, stick figure. It's really brutal. Like,
yeah.
Like, I've hired artists, and it's like, this is like stick figures on a napkin. And like, I need this, and somehow it works out.
Yeah, and they're like, I got it. Don't worry. Yeah. That's crazy. When you graduate high school, I mean, you're still into painting and doing that stuff. Do you go to college? What does that look like for you? Looking for a job?
Absolutely not. What do I do? I get out of high school. I'm 18 years old. What do? I try to reopen my small town restaurant.
At 18.
At 18.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So tell me about this.
No. I live in a small town, rural Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
Middle of Canada. I'm like, no. What I need to do is open up a highway side restaurant. And I found a bank to think it was also a good idea.
Okay. We got start at the beginning. This is why this show exists, because this is crazy. So you get out of high school and how did you get the idea?
Well, the year before, the family who owned and ran that restaurant had shut it down.
Okay.
And there was no restaurant in town at the time. There was nothing. And I was like, huh. I mean, I'm good at cooking. I like cooking stuff. And why not do that instead of commuting to the city for a job?
Okay.
And I did that. And that was, don't do that.
Yeah. Okay. So you get the loan from the bank. The bank sees an 18-year-old and they're like, this is a trustworthy human.
Well, there was a government young entrepreneur program where the government is going to be like, we're going to back if you're young and in a rural environment and want to start a business.
Yeah.
And the bank's like, okay, well, the government's saying that they got you. And you're like, oh, okay, well, let's do that. And then,
what was the type of cuisine?
It was burgers and fries and daily sandwiches and soup.
Great.
And
normal stuff.
Normal, basic stuff.
Okay.
Cookies.
Tell me about your first, like, how, so you open it. How long does it take you to open it, get the restaurant back, ready to go, open, and start?
I had an Excel spreadsheet business plan. I went to the bank. They're like, these numbers look a little too good. I'm like, okay. I go back. I dumb it down a little bit, say it's not going to be so good.
Yeah.
I go back with it, and they're like, approved.
Okay.
And then the only thing we can't give you is the cash flow, like for the supplies and stuff. We'll buy the land and the building and the equipment that's there or whatever. And so I go to my immediate family and like, hey, I need some love money to buy enough stuff to equip this restaurant. And they're like, okay, here you go. And then I go and I say, okay, I've got it. And then they write me a check and I buy the building and the land, which was like 23 lots and an old gas station restaurant conversion building.
Oh my God.
And I go and I get a loan for a minivan so I can haul my groceries, and like $180,000 later.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like flipping burgers and frying fish and chips and opening up at 5 o'clock in the morning so the farmers can get their morning coffee, and running orders out to the potash mine and the pig barn, and working 12, 16 hours every day for 3 years before I'm like, the business died off. There was more competition. The price of everything went up. The gas was going up. And I was like, I need to stop this before I absolutely ruin my entire life. And that's what I did.
Yeah. So it was pretty successful for 3 years.
It was making money for the first 3 years. The bank was flabbergasted. We've never had a restaurant show a profit in the first year.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, really?
That's crazy. Were you able to get out of debts and everything too in the first 3 years?
Yeah. So basically, I had a little carryover debt, but basically the bank said, hey, we're going to put everything up for auction. We're going to sell the land, sell all the stuff. And I took a bit of hit on like the lease for the minivan. I had to return it or whatever.
Okay.
And then I was like, okay, well, that's over. Thank goodness. A lot of it was girls. There was no way to find a girl when you're working that much.
Yeah.
I'm like, by this time I'm 20, 21. I'm like, yeah, I need to do something about that. So,
yeah. So 21, you haven't had art in your life because you're working so much and stuff. You haven't had an artistic outlet. You're looking for love. Tell me, like, what's next?
Next, I go get a job in the city.
Yeah.
And I kind of get back into the Warhammer, and I keep thinking around that. That's my passion thing. That's the thing that keeps me sane, like my outlet where I put all my stuff into. And that was, that was that. And just working. And then I found my now wife at the bar, like everybody else. And that's where you find them. That's where they are.
Yeah.
So that's where you go find them. And then, then just years of just, tinkering around in that. And then I was working in the oil field. And we had a really crappy winter where we're sitting and waiting for work every day all the time. I was like, I need to do something better than this. I need to, this is soul crushing. I want to do, I like miniatures so much. I really want to get into it. I want to do more of it. I want to be part of it and create it or whatever. And then I started dabbling at like trying to invent a war game.
Yeah.
Trying to come up with some ideas like that. But then that all needs like people that are wordsmiths and artists and who can actually draw and do stuff. And I don't have that. I don't have any of that. And then I was like, maybe I should open a store that sells this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, no, the margins are 50%, and this is how much it costs to get started, and you're going to have this much more debt. And I'm like, no, that's not going to work. And then that led me down to manufacturing. I was like, well, that's where you can actually make a little bit of money, and it doesn't cost an arm and a leg to do that. So I was like, well, we'll try that. So I did that.
What year is this when we start doing manufacturing stuff?
We started manufacturing miniatures. That was probably, we started 2015, 2014.
Okay.
Around there. And I had in my head, I needed to buy a spin casting machine because that's how you make metal miniatures.
So okay.
That was my first goal, was that you need a smelter and a spin casting machine and a vulcanizer or whatever. That's what you need to know to make a metal miniature to produce it. I'm like, okay, so that's the goal.
With what you know now, is that true?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. Basically, if you have a sculpted miniature and you have a spin casting and a smelter and a vulcanizing machine, you can produce them and make it profitable. Absolutely. But I didn't know. But what I'm looking into is that the machine and everything's like $10,000. And I didn't have that because I was just working a regular job. I'm like, well, how do I do that? So I need a side gig. And in my side gig, I was like, oh, we should do something at the farmer's market. Make some money to buy this thing. And I got in my head, what about cotton candy? The farmer's market doesn't have cotton candy. Let's get some cotton candy. And I tell my wife, we need a cotton candy machine so I can make some side money to pay for the thing that I want to do. And Thanksgiving, she finds one on Facebook Marketplace, like an hour and a half out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, hey, I found this and we should get it. And I'm like, okay. So we get up and we go.
Yeah.
Just wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning, start driving towards a cotton candy machine. And we buy it.
Okay.
And get it home and we play with him. Okay, so I put my petition to the farmer's market to get a spot.
Yeah.
And like, no, denied 3 times.
Yeah. That's crazy. Like,
perfect.
Yeah.
And one day I'm sitting there because my mind is like, I need to make money to get a spin casting machine. And I'm staring at the cotton candy machine sitting under the desk. And I'm like, well, a spin casting machine just spins. The cotton candy machine spins. Can I turn my cotton candy machine into a spin caster? I happen to have a machinist friend, and I showed him. He's like, yeah, we could do that. And a weekend later, I had a spin casting machine.
Okay, so you had the thing that you were trying to use to pay for it. Yeah, that's amazing.
Wildest story.
Yeah. So
Then we figured out how I bought the rubber that you use to make molds. Did a couple practice runs. I was like, oh, we can actually do this. And then I started hiring miniature sculptors to make miniatures for me to make copies of and sell.
That's so that already is crazy. So not only did you like want to get into manufacturing and not go the factory route, but do it yourself? But then you're hiring sculptors, and this is all for Warhammer or something else?
This is tabletop, just miniatures, not okay. specifically Warhammer. These are just, you know, D&D miniatures, just yeah. whatever people use them for. Because, and my love for toys was always there, right? So I was like, everything was like, I remember my favorite, like, the first miniature I commissioned was Spawn.
Mm-hmm.
Like the comic book hero Spawn or whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
that was
yeah.
the first miniature we commissioned. And because that, you know, because miniatures are like tiny toys. They're just sculptures of toys. And, the first one was Jason Voorhees.
Yeah.
I commissioned a sculptor off Etsy. So on Etsy, this guy offers sculpting services. And I was like, okay, I'm going to pay this guy and he's going to sculpt me something I want custom. And I mean, it was, I didn't, like maybe $300 I paid the sculptor to do this.
Okay.
And it was a rough looking Jason Voorhees.
Yeah.
It was chunky and cartoony, you know, it's only an inch tall. So how good can it be? Right. And he sold though. He says I sold so many of them. It was ridiculous. And that paid to hire somebody to do the Spawn. And that sold pretty well. And then I'm like, okay, well, what's the next thing you're going to do? And I was thinking about ideas and nobody was doing He-Man. And I loved He-Man. And that was kind of a retro, you know, it fits D&D. It fits toys. It fits yeah. everything I like. And I'm like, yeah, well, let's do that. I hired the guy to make the He-Man stuff. And they were great. They're amazing. They look so good. And the molds worked, and I made copies of it. And then when I started researching, you know, fans of He-Man stuff, I come across this PowerCon,
yeah,
which is like the He-Man convention. And I emailed them, hey, can I get a spot? And they're like, yeah, you can get a spot. And I was like, okay. So then we had this plan that we're going to go. Now, this is like, it's like a 14-hour drive. 22-hour drive.
Okay.
From Saskatoon to
yeah
to California to do this thing, which was,
and we're probably at like 2018, 2019,
2017.
Okay.
Yeah, that was 2017. A couple of years I was just selling on Etsy like a hand, like not very many, not really selling a lot, But the He-Man miniatures were selling pretty good online. So, okay, well, that'd be something to take to the He-Man convention. And I made a little table display and had some custom shirts ironed on or whatever, and had a poster. Forgot to take it with us.
Forgot the T-shirts.
And forgot the T-shirts, but we...
You had them, though. You had them.
You're tired.
And I was planning to go, and I was excited, but I found out, well, I was low on the metal, like the actual pewter, and I had ordered some, and they hadn't sent it, and the time was ticking, and it was like the weekend before we had to go, and I didn't have my metal, so I didn't have enough stuff to take, and I was like, oh, okay, so I was like, I'm gonna have to call them and tell them that we can't go, and the next day, which is 3 days before the thing, the metal showed up.
In like ingots, right? Like big things?
Yeah, they're like 1 pound pewter sticks, basically. Yeah.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait. Salvation! Hooray! We're saved in DLV2! Limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys!
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures!
DKE!
And you put it in the smelter, and then you ladle the hot metal into your mold, build the thing spinning, and then you take them out and you clip them, and you have your miniatures. And so I'm up... all day, all night, spinning stacks of these miniatures. And then we just go, just drive. We were supposed to leave at 7. We didn't leave until 1 or 2 because I was still making miniatures. And we drive through the night and we pass out in roadside stops and we just keep going. And we didn't get to the hotel till the 3 o'clock in the morning before the convention started on Friday.
Oh my gosh. So you sleep maybe until 7.
So I pass out for a couple hours. The alarm goes off. Showtime.
Yeah.
And downstairs and we set up our booth and we start selling He-Man's like gangbusters. It was amazing.
Yeah. So tell me, I mean, that's quick. You start making these minis and all of a sudden immediately go to convention, which that's a really scary place for people to go and scary place to, or a scary step to take. Mm-hmm. I go to Designer Con every year and it's just, you see new artists that are taking this first leap. And you did it so quickly and it was successful.
It was successful enough that it was like, that was something worth doing. And it was a crazy good time. And I wanted to do it again, and we were going to go the next year because I had another set of He-Man miniatures to go,
mm-hmm.
but had a work accident or tipped the truck over, got beat up a little bit, so I couldn't go again.
Okay.
And then that's 2018, and then 2019, it just, you know, the online sales were decent enough and I didn't really have the extra to go, so we didn't go, and then COVID.
Yeah.
You know, basically that's how it happened so fast. It was such a, you know, crazy short window. And Etsy really got me with that COVID because, you know, I'd send stuff out and because the shipping was so slow because Canada was backed up and people were getting their stuff late and complaining and getting refunds even though they got their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just hemorrhaging money trying to keep that Etsy store alive. And I was like, enough of that.
Yeah, that is crazy. I mean, and then once COVID hits, like, when do we switch from, because I'm holding Skullmaster and the details and everything that you've sculpted onto this piece are insane and really well done, and everything about this screams to the fact that you know what you're doing. So at some point you move from miniature to like large scale, right?
Well, so when we were hiring people to do miniatures,
mm-hmm.
I had lots of bad problems. I was artists move at their own pace. And
you are not wrong.
And when you're working on somebody else's timetable,
yeah.
But you're trying to make money and you're trying to get things pushed a certain speed.
Yeah.
And you're working with like people from Brazil and people from Spain and like where the miniature artists are, which is not very many anymore. And dealing with their timetable and stuff, it's rough. And they're mm-hmm. busy and they don't have time to do your stuff when you want it done. And you're like, okay, I want it this way. And they're like, well, I did it this way. And I'm like, well,
go back. Yeah, do it the other way.
You know, and like you get this thing done, like, oh, I'm going to ship it, but I gave it to my friend. And then he shipped it on the snail mail because he pocketed the extra shipping I sent him. And it took way, like months and months to get here from wherever. And I'm like, and I'm already past trying to put that stuff out. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
And I complained about this so much. And, I was complaining to my wife about it, and she's like, and I showed her a video of a digital sculpt thing on ZBrush
mm-hmm.
when it was kind of new at the time in mm-hmm. 2017. That was pretty new. And I was showing her, and she's like, I could do that. And I'm like, and she's a nail artist by trade, right? So she's, you know, and she's a little bit more artsy than I am. I'm like, you could do that? And she's like, I think I could do that. And then in the middle of the night, I bought her a display tablet and the ZBrush program, and she woke up finding out that she was going to learn how to sculpt.
Yeah.
And so why the stuff looks so good is because she was spending her first, because she's the sculptor.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one that actually does the digital sculpting. And I'm the one trying to feed her ideas and paint and make molds and do stuff. And so she had, through COVID, like 3 years of practice, but she was focused on making miniatures because I was still thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you try to 3D print a miniature, you have to exaggerate the detail. All the detail is lifted. Everything's a little bit more and stuff. And then, you know, and we're trying to figure out the scaling and things. And mm-hmm. there's a local 3D printer here that we were trying to work with. But then he's like, they started trying to charge us a lot of money for each print, which is valid. But at the point, it's like, okay, well, we're spending as much as on 3D printing as we could have on a 3D printer.
Yeah.
And then you just buy a 3D printer and then you dive in trying to figure that out yourself too. And so, I don't know, this is our 8th 3D printer now, probably.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. Like, I kickstart a 3D printer, the Spark Maker, like uh-huh. way back when it first came out, which was like a terrible 3D printer.
Yeah.
It's called the Spark Maker. And if you look into it, it's because when you plugged it in, it would shock you. Like, oh, like a terrible,
jeez.
Terrible.
Jeez.
It was out before the form was originally.
Yeah.
Like, it was an old 3D printer. And I've been through it for a while.
Yeah. It's crazy how good 3D printing has gotten.
Oh, get out of here.
There is a figure that I got sent from Fidget Figs, and the 3D printing is so good that his figure works off ball, socket, and magnet, and they all have the right tension,
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. it's crazy.
Well, it's the new materials too, like that, you know, that Seriotech Tenacious and stuff.
Yeah.
People have come up with their own recipes where they make Tenacious with some other stuff, and they get some really tough, interesting stuff.
Yeah.
You know, just playing around with resin and stuff. I haven't really done the messed too much around mixing the 3D printed resin, but then I mix more of the smooth on resins to try to get that same thing, right? Because I mean, they can get pretty tough, but they're still not as tough as I want them to be.
Mm-hmm.
3D prints, like, they're just, they still have that, they'll still shatter at the right point. Doesn't matter what the product is. So most stuff does, but that I do like the smooth on resin, that you can get some pretty tough, bendy looking stuff.
That's crazy. With the 3D printing, I mean, that's when you start doing toys. When do you have the conversation, let's move up from miniatures?
Well, it was, you know, she was starting to get really good at sculpting, and the miniatures were coming out really decent. I was really happy with them.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with miniature people is they want more.
Yeah.
Miniatures is world building,
mm-hmm.
not focus on characters, right? Like, if you wanted to do a miniature, you know, it's a character and then like 10 chuds, you know, and they all want them to be different now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I first started wargaming, you had like one guy, like a captain, one unique guy, chud one, chud two, and copies of chud one, chud two.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a base army or force or unit. But with miniatures, they want a lot. And
yeah,
you got to have the heroes and the bad guys and multiple factions. And like, it just snowballs into a lot
mm-hmm.
of stuff. And it was a lot for her to handle. She didn't like doing, she doesn't have as much time. She doesn't want to put as much time into that. It's a big grind to do a lot of stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And then we did our first toy, and she really liked it. She really enjoyed doing the toys, you know, cause you start off with the symmetry, you know, and then it's every toy is basically one character, and then you start adding stuff to it and that. So it was leaning into her skill, and I was like, well, she enjoys that better. I got to live with her. Plus she's my sculptor.
I got to live.
She's amazing. She's incredibly crazy supportive. You have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, the best thing in the world.
I'm assuming so because I've heard some of your ventures and she put up with all of them. So,
well, my whole thing with her all the time was I support everything she does. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter from roller derby to cross stitching to painting to sourdoughing to what are some more things?
Snowboarding.
All the different things. We'll go, you want to do that? Let's do it. And of course I selfishly do that because I know I'm going to have some crazy ideas that need the equal support.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. And it's great. It's always been awesome having a sculptor. Cause she's like, they're sculpting. And I'm like over her shoulder. I was like, can you just this way and make that a little bit longer.
Yeah.
A bit bigger here. Just, you know, the things you could not do if you hired a sculptor.
Right.
Like,
right.
Like there's no way any sculptor would let anybody do anything like what I'm doing. Like just, and then like, you know, I'll smooth out that nipple, make those butt cheeks, you know, not so big and, you know, just,
yeah,
you know, get in there nuances or. And my favorite thing, my absolute dream favorite thing when she's sculpting is like, I will download this idea and I'll go have a nap on the couch and I'll wake up and I come check out what her progress is. Like, that's exactly what I was thinking about. Perfect.
Yeah.
it's really a dream. That's the best way to, aside from being able to do it myself.
Yeah.
Which I think I would not do as good as she does. Mm. Because I find she's the one on the ZBrush. She learns all the controls. ZBrush is a lot. I don't know if you've ever played with it.
Yeah.
Like it's those controls trying to figure out, like I've got no digital art background, whatever, aside from paint. Mm-hmm. And watching what she can do is really amazing. And then being able to manipulate it just with my voice and have something come out and tweaked and perfect. And I'm like, yeah, that's it. Let's go with that. And then,
yeah.
And then we'll print it. I'm like, nah, that didn't work out. Let's go back and fix it. You could not do that with if you had to hire a sculptor or work with a sculptor, like even if your friend was a sculptor, he'd be beating your brains. I mean, she comes close, but I could be a lot.
So when did you make, what was the first toy you made? Was it Schoolmaster?
No, the first toy.
Was
it the He-Man stuff?
He-Man stuff, but the first one I made was Powerpuff Girl.
A Powerpuff Girl. She made a Powerpuff Girl. Was her first toy-esque, just, you know.
Buttercup
from Powerpuff Girls was something she made for herself. And she made a Mumra and a Lion-O. And then it started to progress from there. And then
it was He-Man and then it was Ninja Turtles.
Right.
And from Ninja Turtles, she went to the Dino.
Yeah. And then so I did like a whole redesign of He-Man 5.5. Like we made our own He-Man and Skeletor and Teela, Evil-Lyn, Beastman, Merman. I think all the way up to Trapjaw, making a whole set of He-Mans. But then, you know, at that time, Origins came out and He-Man was like everywhere.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, there's no point of releasing a He-Man thing that's, you know, can't compete with actual He-Man toys.
So, yeah.
You know, we went with a different direction, tried some different stuff. Pretty early on was like this Galaxian made a.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. He's got like this ring pop shaped head.
Yeah.
Kind of wild. And she made me Batman and the whole Justice League too. Lots of different stuff. It's hard to remember. There's so many.
At what point did you realize that you wanted to move from miniature and start selling toys? Because that's a jump in and of itself.
Yeah, it was probably when we came up with the idea for Dynamites.
Okay.
That's this guy.
Yeah.
It's
yeah, he looks great.
Yeah, he's like fully 5.5, even the tail turns and
yeah. Have you started producing those? How come I haven't seen some of them?
This is the first silicone mold of it.
Okay.
This is the product of the first silicone mold. Of it. I actually have the artist that did concept art for it and stuff and everything. And but this was basically like, you know, I was like, I want to do something like He-Man, but sci-fi, but like, let's do it like dinosaurs. And this is what we came up with. And this is what I want to, this and some other things I want to really get out here right away. It's all about like figuring out the one resin I use for 3D printing mm-hmm. doesn't react as bad with a specific smooth on silicone.
Okay.
And so I'm working with that. And then I've also got to work with some coating
mm-hmm.
From Vinyl Hunt Wonder to seal it in to make sure that those molds don't fail.
Yeah. When you produced the dynamite, started showing people, what was the reception like?
Well, I mean, really just kind of showing my friends and family and stuff. Everybody really liked them. They have that look, that nostalgia. They look like they could have been a toy, which was mm-hmm. what I was going for. They look like they should have come from the 80s.
Yeah.
That's really what the notes I was trying to hit on that. And that body type and that turned into Skull Man. And I was going to do like a whole barbarian version of, you know, we did like a bunch of other characters on that Skull Man base.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course with me, I have a hard time trying to pick a size, you know, like I wanted to start off. I was going to do like the little,
you know,
muscle men size. And then it goes up.
Yeah. That size is a great size. It's like, it fits perfectly in the hand.
Yeah. That's a 3.75. Yeah. Like that. And, but I really, you know, and I like messing around with the colors, like playing with the glow in the dark stuff was really cool.
Yeah.
Like that. But I mean, my love is, I love the hand painted stuff. I like just, I love getting in there and putting paint on figures.
The Skeletor, it had to have done well when you, did you produce this in a Skeletor run?
No.
What are you doing?
I did. I tried. I made the big 8.5-inch one.
Okay.
And I made four of the red and gray Skullman color, and I made a glow in the dark version. I made the Skeletor one.
Yeah.
And I put them on my web store. I just don't have enough traffic. I don't have enough eyeballs on the product, I think, to and it looks, and the big one looks like a Sifubi, but it's, you know, hollow cast resin. So I don't know if that was an issue.
Yeah. I mean, we did talk about that. That's pretty intense. That means it's lightweight because it's all hollow, almost like blow molded. It's retrocast. Mm-hmm. It's crazy that because they're so clean and because like the paints are so well done, it's crazy that those haven't picked up.
Mm-hmm. Like it was just recently I had my Blue Monster, which was a Skullman body version of my Blue Monster.
Yeah.
And somebody picked that up and they loved that. And I was happy about that. That was really cool. And yeah, I mean, I want to get into Sifubi. I really do. I even tried doing the home cook stuff out on my balcony.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like following the craftsman, trying to figure out he does the sock mold. Mm-hmm. And I tried that to not great success so far.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to try it again. Because a lot of the stuff I have would make really awesome Sifubi stuff, and I wanna get there.
Yeah, I think so I'm interested in the Skullmaster so much. I think because I did one, I'm working on the next one, the next Sifubi piece, and I think the hard part, and Chris Lee and I talked about this a lot, is it's like, what can be sold? And stepping into a new thing where a mold potentially costs 800 to $2,000.
Right.
And then that doesn't even include the pulls. That doesn't include if you want paint or paint masks. And so it's like all those things. and then the potential to like not sell a single thing because the market's like, nope, we're good.
Well, that was my idea with the big Skull Man. Was like, I'll do a small, just a hand cast one, and like, if that sold, if people were into that, you know, I could use the ready view of that to like maybe get into Safubi, right? Like, it's just, you know, and then of course I've got the bad ADHD, so of course my mind is always going.
Yeah,
you know, I'm like 100 steps ahead of my wife with sculpting and stuff all the time. I've got so many. Go here, go there, go whatever.
Tell me about the articulation, because you guys are sculpting and you're. This is
just, you know, it's Safubi style.
Yeah.
You know, this one, the wrist turn too, which is nice.
Unreal.
You know, we could do the articulation anyway, would work. I did the, because I was having problems with the molding and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Skullman 3.7 turned into just the 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
But the, like the Safubi one, his waist turns and his arms turn and everything.
Which is unreal. It's such a good piece. I think when you, like you guys have nailed so many parts of the action figure process, which are so tough.
Yeah. Like for sculpting, I think we're there. I think.
Yeah.
For sculpting, so now I figured out joints. We've got the joint figured out. I like the joints we're doing. I like the mechanism of the joint works really good. The I call it the we call them pop pins, but it's like a big Glios pin. You know, it's just I like the way that it works.
Yeah, are you able to pull it out? Like I wanted to pull it off, but yeah, I'm too nervous.
You should be able to just like pull it off. It's just
Are we going to break this on camera right now?
I don't think so.
Because it doesn't, it has no.
Give it a warm up wiggle.
I'm so scared. Okay, I'll make you a deal. If I end up breaking this, I will go online today and buy one of the big ones because I.
If you break it, I'll send you another one.
Oh, I'm like pulling so hard. There's no way.
Okay. Well, is it just, maybe it's the clear.
Go. So it is a crazy style of Glios-esque, but it is so well done. Is your wife sitting right there?
She is.
I don't.
Come here.
Yeah, like this is like if you're the one that did this, I have to talk to you about this. This is wild. This is like. The one thing, so I work with sculptors and like I had a piece like created and I wanted it done super well and we worked and he is incredible at what he does. And he like didn't know how to do articulation. And I don't know if you know this, but in the toy community, articulation is pretty dang important.
Yes.
And so the fact that you have been able to do articulation on a 3D sculpt that can be 3D printed and doesn't use magnets or glue or anything and has the tension and you did it.
There's been a lot of tests and trial to get there. There's been lots of different
that was no
kegs no and kinks and versions to get to that.
Yeah.
So this is the big Skull Man.
Yeah.
And he twists at the waist.
Okay.
And at the arms, but he's like he's held together with a bungee cord.
Unreal.
And it's a little bit different. You know, it was kind of like the G.I. Joe, where it's like a triangle shaped bungee cord holding them together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what gave him his articulation. But I didn't like it, like it was a little too floppy. And then so that's where we changed up where. You know, I thought about the Glios pin and I was like, well, let's just make it bigger to fit the joint.
Mm-hmm.
And of course.
Uh-oh, here we go. The joints are done so well that like I'm a pretty strong guy and I pulled with all my might, didn't break the joint and it popped out. So
yeah, it's pretty on there.
Yeah.
It's like this one is pretty on there, and the joint is like, it's really nice and tight. It's I could probably do the tail.
I can't tell you though, like, how long I've been looking for stuff like this, because it's like, I have my own character named Astron, and I have gone through rendition after rendition of joints and clips. And because, like, when you do the clip one, sometimes it was too cold, those snap.
Mm-hmm.
And I need one for the head, arms, waist. Like, he's a full 4-point articulation. And so it is crazy that you just knock it out of the park like that.
Well, I tried, like, I noticed with this, we tried doing a smaller Glios pin. Like,
yeah.
Like, I actually, like, kind of, like, measured the Glios pin and tried it.
Uh-huh.
And with resin, it's just not strong enough.
Like, yeah.
With casting.
It's brittle, yeah.
It's a little brittle, right? And I was like, well, let's just make it bigger. You know, more material anchored into the sculpt and stuff. And it really works. And because, like, when you first cast it, when it's warm, like when it's fresh, it's the resin I use is a little flexible.
Mm-hmm.
And I pop it, I clean it up real quick and I pop it together. And then when it gets cold, it's, you can't take it apart, but it works.
Yeah. That's unreal. So, I mean, great job on this. Holy crap. Yeah. yeah, the sculpt is clean. The big ones are great. It's crazy. So here's the question. This husband-wife duo, what's next?
District.
Okay, District is next. That's what I'm talking about. And I still need to get that video edited and up. But what is, though, I think that's a great idea, and I love that, and I can't wait to have your piece. What's next for you?
Well,
getting stuff out.
Yeah, we are good at coming up with characters, getting workshopping everything, getting 3D printed. We're not the best at actually getting them out to the public.
Mm.
Find a new thing to fall in love with and figure out every problem with it over and over.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we just actually have to get stuff out.
It is tough. I think that's the hard part of being an artist or making. I think you're scratching the surface of, like, well, I want to make the next thing. I want to go to the next. There is a very big reason as to why I help other people produce their stuff, because I get my hand in it, but it's not mine, and I get to just move on to the next one.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely always a challenge, especially with me, because I got so many ideas, and for me, I love, like, sets of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I don't like I don't have one dynamite. I got six dynamites and four more ideas for dynamites, and it's always this progression thing, trying to get down to just one character to get from start to finish and produced out to people. That is what I have a bit of a grind with.
Yeah,
and I need to do a better job of that for sure. That
is
definitely. Yeah.
Holy moly.
That is the goal, and working on the silicone, getting the molds made and stuff, and figuring that out. That is what I've been working on for the last little while.
Are you guys planning on more conventions or any kind of shows or anything soon?
Oh, I mean, we're in the middle of Canada, so there's nothing here.
Yeah.
There's not really.
Okay. Enough. Can you explain that to me? So the US is dwarfed by the size of Canada. And when you say the middle, like, it, for us, the middle still is, like, livable, and there's still, like, a big population. The way that I've seen Canada is, past a certain point, no one goes.
Canada.
Yeah.
So, like, where are you?
Our city is, the city is 380,000.
About there.
That's a big city.
It's a big city. It's the biggest city in Saskatchewan, which is the center province of Canada.
Right.
If you looked at Canada as a whole, we're right in the middle. It's literally the triangle province, and it's the city in the middle, Saskatoon. It's
that's the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Middle of nowhere.
Okay.
It's, you know, the closest city is, like, Calgary. That's 8 hours away.
Yeah.
You know, you probably have Calgary, Alberta, or Edmonton, Alberta. That's 8 hours one way. It's, I don't know, 14, 16 hours to Quebec the other way, Ontario, all that stuff. It's
Where's Edmonton or Toronto from you?
What? Edmonton's in Alberta, so it's one way, it's 7 hours. Toronto's like 22 hours the other way.
Those are the only two things I know about Canada. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I know.
I just know that there's a part on the U.S. border. There's a dip where Canada, like, it, all of a sudden there's a thing for Canada. Whatever city's in that dip has more people than the whole province.
Yeah, that's Ottawa, Ontario.
Which is insane. Yeah. That's crazy. I hope that you guys do eventually get to shows or you come back out this way.
I wanted to go to the designer con. It's just I never thought I had enough stuff to take. Like, I really wanted to go to this last one in Vegas. I was ripped ready to go.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to go next year.
Okay.
For sure. My cousin wants to do his birthday on the same weekend, so I thought that'd be a 2-4.
Yeah. It is a crazy show. I will tell, like, I was at the Vegas one, because it's new, it doesn't feel like the one that was in Anaheim, which isn't a problem. It'll become whatever. But it is, it's busy. There's people just passing you nonstop.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing is, it's like, I know we got lots of stuff. We got lots of characters that I just need to, get molds down that I can produce. And that's the other thing, like, the, trying to work with silicone, like with the 3D printing, if you use a tin cure, like the Umu.
Mm-hmm. Umu's the worst.
It works with 3D prints, but it's a terrible mold. And then it's double molding everything, and that's a hassle. I've been trying to figure out the best way to do it and try to figure, you know, because like, and that's the thing, like with the pins, if you coat them, you're losing the tension. So trying to figure out that best medium to get the 3D prints molded is really what I need to figure out and what we're working on now.
Yeah. Because you're so good at sculpting, there is a thing called making a mutant. Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure if it's still operating. I think it is. His name, the one that runs it, is Dimension X Toys.
Yeah. I've seen
please reach out. Because the way that it functions is they'll put out, like, they want to do something that's two characters, one good, one bad, a little sidekick on both sides, and a weapon. And each artist sculpts an arm or a leg or something, and then it all comes together. And that is where, like, it is a community of sculptors that you will immediately be ingratiated in, and, like, more eyes will be on you. And then when they publish them and all kinds of stuff, they're really cool people. But you have the skill set to do it, and with the articulation that you guys have nailed, this is the place. And you, like, do that, please do that. I know that they would love it.
That is definitely a goal. That's what we've been working on. Is, you know, and I feel like we've got. I like that articulation system we've got.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the we've got. She's got some base. Meshes for the bodies and sculpts and stuff that are really killer right now that I really like. Like, we got the where she's done her own. This is our barbarian squat buck.
Heck yeah.
You know, and that has all the same articulation. I don't like the leg articulation. I don't know how people feel about that. I've been contentious with me about trying to figure out if people are really. I like the hard legs because it doesn't break.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, you know, like trying to do chainmail
mm-hmm.
over the thighs and stuff and have that come out looking nice as a toy. It looks much better as just a solid piece.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of Sifubis do that where it's just one piece and maybe like the boots twist.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have a couple pieces that are like that.
Yeah. It's just that He-Man crotch, you know, like that waist leg swivel. I find it unsightly.
This is ETC's, and it's all one piece and just the feet turn.
Yeah, exactly.
He kept it really good with that.
Yeah.
I mean, Sifubi, I've fallen in love with it, which is crazy. I didn't ever think I would, but I've fallen in love with collecting it and all that kind of stuff. And, went on a deep rabbit trail of like, how did it start and all that stuff, and that's coming out.
But you, like, your partner on that chum, right? Like, he looks great.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it, like, simple sculpt, like, just one point. It's a cool little piece. Yeah. But, I again, not mine. I get to move on. And it's, like, the next one is this Godzilla-themed piece that I'm really excited for. And he's coming out probably in January, which I'm excited for. And so, but, yeah, I just, like... I hear the when you guys say like, oh, there's just not enough traffic. But then I see the skill and I'm floored at that piece. I'm pumped that you guys came on. The last part of the podcast is always just a way that people can get to you and hear your story or plug anything that they can buy toy, anything from you that you want to get out there.
Well, we have a big cartel store linked on the Instagram. It's just Asinine Toys on Instagram. Check that out and then keep an eye out. We're going to as soon as that. Get a spot on that district. I'll be there.
Heck yeah!
We're gonna start throwing stuff on there as soon as we. Is that live yet for the?
It is live. You're allowed to throw stuff once you're on it. You can do that. And we're gonna. I'm gonna put that video up and hopefully get more people on. The hard part is, I have to always tell people it is the scariest thing for people to jump to something new. The first part will be the slowest. Mm-hmm. The next part will be the quickest. So it's just going to take all of our effort on this first part to roll.
It's not that scary. I've only got like 170 followers or whatever. It's not that big of a jump for me.
I mean, hey, after this episode, we're going to get that up. Also, yeah, we're doing that. We're like, is your guys' postage fixed with Canada yet? I know they're all on strike.
They are back.
Okay.
Back. It's, but I mean, I always anticipate there's going to be a bit of a drag, you know, a couple of weeks from, you know, what didn't get go out, but we actually got a mail today. So they are out doing stuff.
Were you, not getting mail for a while? Because that is also,
yeah, they just stop. Like not just packages, everything, no bills.
I don't love that.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. That's because like, do you get to, just not pay bills then?
No. They'll tell you. They'll email you and tell you that you still got to pay your bills even though if we don't send it to you.
I'm really pumped about the fact that they still obviously still require you to pay the bills, but you have no clue the bills have come in.
Yeah.
Did you get like a bundle today? Just like a
I got two power bills back to back.
Yeah.
So technically, kind of, but. It's not so bad for shipping stuff out because we do have FedEx and UPS and stuff. We do have alternatives here that when I need to send something out, I can go there. It's just, you know, it's I got to physically go there and do it. It's a little bit annoying.
Unreal. Well, hey, I'm pumped that you guys came on. It means the world. This episode comes out on Monday. So you're my last episode of 2024.
Wow.
And I'm so thank you for making it work too. Like, Christmas Eve's coming up, everything, and you guys still were able to jump on. And now I'm bummed that he didn't have you come on right at the beginning. What are you doing?
Well, she was there. She's apprehensive to, you know, but yeah. She is the light. She is the talent. She is the one that makes all this happen. all my crazy ideas and dreams and stuff are literally molded in front of my face. I love it. You can't imagine like sitting there watching her on ZBrush manipulate it in your idea into reality.
Yeah.
In real time. I can't compare it to anything else, you know. Right. And I've talked to some other people. Oh, your wife doesn't make you toys? That's
a bummer.
Bummer.
But
I can't do that. That's how I feel. It's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, it sounds amazing. Thank you so much to both of you guys for coming on to the podcast today.
Yeah, no, anytime, and Merry Christmas.